Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Welcome to the Runner's World Podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking with Kieran Alger about run commuting.
Oh, my favourite topic of how to get to work. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I've been doing some urban exploring, Ben. So I've been trying to do these kind of fairly long runs on the weekend. I've been over to Greenwich, as you know, been to Beckenham, Crystal Palace, and I've went to Croydon on Saturday. But I've had to go quite old school because I'm not signed up to Strava's paid for service. So I would have plotted the route on Strava. But now right. I've had to move to something called onthegomap.com. I think I may be its only user.
Yeah, I mean, I've not heard of it.
No, it's pretty basic. So you can't get any kind of GPX files out of it or anything. So basically, I plot the route and it tells you how far it is. And then I have to go around writing down road names and little kind of left or right direction arrows on a piece of paper that I put in my pocket.
Do you know of Google Maps, mate? Have you heard of that?
Yeah, no. Why am I not using Google Maps? Because I have used Google Maps before. Why am I not using that? I don't know.
I love.
Yeah,
fact
so
you're,
I was kind of.
Are.
I could have been spotted round Croydon with my little getting my little map out at most major junctions.
The fact that you write it down on a piece of paper and then it's good. Mm. I think it's an enhancement of learning a route. I think. You can miss a trick if you're totally tied to looking at GPS.
I completely agree.
You can miss a few, like a nice little deviation here and there, but that's nice. That's like that's like when before mobile phones. To all the young people out there, it's like before you had to have a list of numbers at the ready. However,
oh,
you
yeah.
wanted to keep,
and you would know people's numbers as well, right? Like
yeah,
maybe
exactly.
Your three best mates or. You know, your girlfriend's number, you'd know off by heart.
For sure.
I didn't have a girlfriend back then, who am I kidding? But, you know,
yeah,
in theory.
Come on, I knew my mum and dad's number, that was it. but, you know, you used to memorise these things. So I suppose that's kind of like, maybe a part of the brain that needs awakening.
Oh, mate, completely. I think, should I want to go back to Lloyd Park in Croydon, I could run there without the need for a sort of a little paper map. But I'm not sure that the same would be true if I was just a slave to... You know, if I was getting told exactly where to go by technology. But no, it was good. It wasn't the best route, actually. Lloyd Park's very nice, very green and like hilly. But I was hoping to have plotted a slightly nicer route because it was quite sort of just fairly nondescript roads until we got there. But it was
fine.
Good. Yeah.
How are you, mate?
You're almost on paternity leave, Ben.
I am. Yeah, this is going to be... Well, we banked a couple of podcasts, but this will be my sort of last recording for a while. I'm off for I'm taking a month.
Nice.
Imagine that. It's number two is arriving imminently. So, very excited. Really looking forward to it. I feel like all of the things I learned from one, I've forgotten. So that's good. And I get to just, probably deal with the fallout of number one, realizing that all the stories that we've been telling him about how great number two is going to be aren't true. So that'll be a rude awakening for everyone.
Oh, good.
But
time.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. And not to say that I'm going to cherish being away from work, but it'll be nice to have a break. I think, this year has been somewhat unrelenting, I think.
Definitely.
With lockdown taking place and the whole working from home situation. So, yeah, it'll be good. And, you know, if I take a leaf out of your book, Rick, I'll be running more than ever.
It is possible, I think. Well, some news. So, yes, lots of big races cancelled last week. So, New York City Marathon was cancelled. Great North Run was cancelled. I think Royal Parks was cancelled as well.
It was indeed, yeah.
But there is one marathon getting the go-ahead. So, over in Germany, the Hamburg Marathon on 13th of September will take place with 10,000 runners plus an elite race. And there are various, like, social distancing practices being put in place. So, I think you've got to wear a mask in the start and finish pen and also at the expo and staggered starts. I think go off in sort of batches of 1,000, roughly 10-minute intervals. No medals or goodie bags, obviously, at the end. I think it's... I'm kind of a bit torn about it. I think, like, big races, it does feel like it's a bit of a gamble. But in a country like Germany that's dealt with this pandemic pretty well, I kind of think it's... I personally think it's quite encouraging. You think, actually, if you can be seen to do this sensibly, then that's great.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's I guess the circumstance in Germany is very different to what we have over here in terms of how it was dealt with, how their lockdown has been phased in and out, how, you know, the country's responded. So it kind of from, I think if you look, if you sort of treat it as from the British perspective of how the whole thing's gone, sounds kind of terrifying. But I think Germany is obviously a very different, they're a very different phase of it all. So it sounds pretty good. I think running, you know, like, I don't know, keep like you've got to keep holding your mask. You don't want to, you've got to wear it at the start and the finish. But what do you do with it in the meantime? It's probably stuff it in a pocket, I suppose. Do you know, like, if you when people lose their race numbers at like at major marathons, they can be refused finish. You know, so if you lose your mask, you're not allowed into the finish area.
Probably not, Ben. Yeah, that's. I mean, it's a good point.
So I don't know if there's. I mean, it's all these things are facilitating the race to go ahead. It just adds a degree of race day tension. But I think, you know, if everyone wants to start racing again, there's going to need to be a few events like this that trial different formats that safely. Obviously, it's not just for people to start doing races again. But, you know, there's going to need to be some events that take a new approach to what racing might look like.
Yeah, and I think, as you were sort of saying there, like, we have to accept that racing going back on, if you look at that as the kind of, that's what we all want, it will come with some caveats, and that might be, you know, carrying a mask, or it might be in the smaller fields, or that the whole starting pen thing at the beginning takes twice as long, I guess, if you're going to stagger stuff. It's going to be like, you know, there's going to be a fair amount of waiting around, but hopefully the means justify the ends if big racing is going to get back on the schedule anytime soon. So I thought, actually, yeah, interesting news, because it's just been about cancellations, but it seems like one race is sort of bucking the trend there.
Well, anyway, Rick, I have some delightful pseudoscience for you.
Oh, my favourite part of the show.
Yes. And this is that if you're getting injured through running, you need to have a word with yourself.
Ooh, okay.
A new study published in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning found that when runners heard spoken instructions such as land light and run tall, their ground reaction force decreased by 17%. Right? Leading researchers to conclude that verbally directed running instructions may reduce the likelihood of impact injuries.
Ooh.
So, what does that mean? It means if you create your own verbal cues and you say them to yourself out loud on your next run, particularly those relating to, I guess, going by the study, landing lightly, running tall, posture, elegance, if you will, when we run. Then, yeah, if you sort of use these verbal cues, then it triggers, I guess, a reaction in the body to sort of to do these things, and that is what has reduced the reaction forces. So that's. It's pretty interesting.
It is. I mean, 17% is a load, isn't it? That's like a big marked difference. I think you'd want to be saying that to yourself on a quiet road, wouldn't you? Or maybe in a quiet voice. I mean, just sort of shouting.
Yeah, I don't think you should be shouting. Land light! Yeah, I don't think that we should be doing that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, actually. I mean, I would probably say that I've definitely... When I run, I definitely have like a I have triggers in my like in my brain that will keep that roll through every sort of conscious like throughout the whole process. I don't know how, if you know. I imagine some people just run along and it's just like birdsong and it's all like idyllic. Whereas my brain is the opposite. Mine's like a sort of like constant stream of like adjustment. So I imagine that it's kind of a bit like that. But you just kind of like make sure that you say exactly the sort of the right thing,
the right cues,
exactly, out loud. And I mean, I had that we talked about this before. I went and did some speed work after not doing any speed work for ages and ages and ages, and discovered that I wasn't actually driving properly through my gate. And I realized that by saying out loud, come on, like, I have to like drive now, that initiated the actual to run properly. So yeah, it definitely has an impact, I think, and just being saying things out loud.
Oh, yeah, and you can imagine, like, you know, a sort of track coach, you know, like shouting, like, instructions at their athletes on, you know, as they go around the bend or whatever. I kind of think it makes sense. But, yeah, 17%, big difference that. I tell you what, Ben, we have probably prattled on long enough, haven't we? It's time to get our guest of the week involved.
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
With many people returning to their places of work but looking to avoid taking public transport to get there, the idea of the active commute is becoming more appealing. While cycling may be the obvious choice, there is much to recommend about the run commute. Kieran Algo has been looking into the gear, tech and knowledge required to make run commuting your go-to method of travel. Kieran, welcome to the Run As Well podcast.
Thanks for having me on. How's it going?
Yes, all good. Yeah.
Are you boys on commuters, or are you on the trains?
I would say 80 to 90% cycling, and then 80% and then 20% run commuting.
That's very good, mate.
And that's it. I never do any. I avoid public transport. It's just not very fun.
I've got a bit of a conundrum. Where my commute is actually, I mean, I'm currently working from home, so I'm not commuting, but it's quite good. It's like it's a bit of a walk down to Herne Hill Station, then it's an overground train to Victoria, and then it's a nice walk. So it's kind of active in its own way. But I'm definitely thinking about could I either run or cycle? Like, maybe not running both ways in the day would be like, you know, would be like 12 miles a day, a bit much probably. But could I do a cycle and then a run if I worked it out?
Well, what you've both just described is pretty much how people do it. They're sort of multimodal journeys is the sort of technical terms for it, but where you can break journeys up into different modes of transport, or in fact you break up the week and you might cycle some, you might run some. So I guess a lot of people might cycle in one day, run home, and then run in and cycle home to kind of cope with all of the logistics of it. So you guys have described kind of the perfect run commuter journeys.
Yes.
Great.
Doing it. This is spot on, you know. And I love, Rick, I love that you've got this kind of either side of the train bit. You might have this really sort of beautiful space to go and have a really nice experience. So, you know, I guess one of the things that we've sort of found, according to the Sport England stats, 1 in 5 people actually have started running during lockdown. And there's a lot of surveys that have shown that, you know, a lot of us are going to keep this going, have an intention to keep this going beyond lockdown. You know, we've picked up a good habit and we want to carry on. So I've sort of been looking into whether or not right now is the moment that run commuting could really sort of be a very positive thing, could change the way that we get to and from places. And that's not just running to and from work, but actually kind of active travel to do other journeys, other chores, you know, going to the post office and that kind of thing. And what's really interesting, and I didn't really expect it to be this big, but there's 25% of trips are actually under a mile, 68% are actually under 5 miles. So that's of car trips. So, you know, we're doing some really sort of short, potentially, you know, doable, achievable journeys on 4 wheels, and we could take to 2 wheels or go to our feet for those. And only a quarter of those are work related. So the rest of them are all about us kind of nipping to the shops or taking kids to school or taking on other errands. So there's actually a really big sort of potential for us maybe to change the way we move.
Yeah, and it feels like there's a kind of government push towards this, Kieran, as well, right?
Yeah, so the government have announced quite a big investment it's big for the for this kind of active travel. It's not big in the big kind of grand scheme of things. Like we've got 2 billion investment to kind of change the conditions that we face on the roads, whether that's sort of low traffic neighborhoods, widening for cycling. If you look at the London, there's now, it's part of, you know, planning requirements that you build in showers and facilities for people to run or cycle commute into any new building developments. So we're getting behind kind of all that self-powered stuff. I think it's a small portion. There's still something like 275 billion a year spent on road travel, but you know, start. And there's possibly like a never sort of been a better time to for people to have a go because the roads are quieter, you know.
Definitely, yeah. And there's lots of good studies about actually sort of productivity as well. Like, you know, like if you do an active commute, you're actually potentially going to be a more focused and productive worker. So it's in kind of industries should be looking into this, and workplaces thinking actually we can get better employees as a result of this as well.
Yeah, I mean the benefits are huge. I mean across there's sort of that you know performance, there's sort of mental health, there's physical health, there's you know if you're taking cars off the road in sort of local neighborhoods, have the capacity to create kind of more friendly neighborhoods generally. There's just so much you know upside to this. But I guess there's, you know, it's not every journey can be done under sort of self-power, but there's quite a lot of opportunity for some of them. And I did it for about 5 years. And actually the other benefit is it completely changed my running. Things like it made me a lot more resilient. So someone said to me, you know, you can't quit 3 miles into your 6 mile run to work.
That's really true. Yeah, that's really true.
You have to go to work. Like that's
I'm not coming in today because I've bust halfway. Yeah, but other things like it got me used to carrying packs. So when it came to moving up and doing an ultra, I was used to carrying things, and I got into the you know that part of the holy grail of training for a faster marathon, that sort of double running. You know, and I was able to do that to and from work, and I learned to have a better approach to kind of slower paced recovery runs on the second run. So
I think that's massive, Kieran, because I think a lot of people, you know, don't do enough easy running. I think there's something about a commute to work that kind of encourages a sensible, easy pace. You know, I don't think there's a lot of people going out there thinking, I'm going to try and get a 10K PB on my way to work. You know, it just doesn't feel like that kind of arena.
Yeah. And with that as well, actually, then you look at, you know, we tend to sort of think of commuting as quick as we can from A to B, but actually the idea that maybe if you extend the time that it takes and you take a loop through something that's greener and nicer to run, actually this time has so much value outside of just the functional kind of side of it that, you know, it can change your day as well. So it's a way of converting that time, not just into, you know, a replacement for public transport, but actually building something into your day that's going to be really, really positive.
I think it was Susie. Susie Cham did it. She sort of doesn't have her commute anymore, but when she was commuting and she was doing it on Strava, she would run a different road every day, or she was running a different, like, so her commute journey, even though she was going from point A to point B, was never quite the same every time. I thought that was brilliant, because that just means there's no monotony to it. You're not the same path, the same, which, you know, with running can get really boring if you do the same loop all the time. And that's one of the things with the commute, is if you find a route that works and gets you to work on time, then you'll probably keep doing it. So it was good to see. That was a sort of something that I saw someone else doing, and I thought that's a good way of keeping it like fresh at least.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think, like, when you're training for a marathon, say, well, hopefully when marathons come back on, like, two of the things I've always struggled with is, how am I going to run enough miles, and how am I going to do this without it taking up loads and loads of free time? And I feel like run commuting is like, it's kind of dead time, isn't it? You have to get to work and back, and it's about the same time as taking public transport. So it's quite easy to justify from that perspective.
That's actually a driver for, I spoke to Dr. Simon Cook, who his PhD kind of thesis was basically on run commuting. And he told me that one of the biggest kind of driving factors in people taking this up was actually just what you've described, that situation. There's a lot of people who are training for marathons and want to use that time sensibly or fit in the longer runs or whatever, so they flip to it. And then I think you sort of realize that one of the things is sort of about realizing how achievable it is to do. And there are a couple of big barriers, actually. One of them is knowing how long it will take you to do it. thinking about whether or not you get lost, and then also working out what might be a nice route. And so I was going to sort of give you guys some examples of tech that you can use to solve some of those problems. And I think, you know, most of us are probably familiar with Google Maps navigation, and it's got a cycling routes and walking routes, and you can basically tap in where you want to go, pick a route, pair it with some headphones, and you'll actually get voice guidance over your headphones. So it will tell you with enough time when you've got to turn left and right. Now, if you put it on the walking routes, it'll give you an estimated duration and arrival time. So that could really take some of the guesswork out of it. And if you want to, that's based on walking speeds, but if you want to kind of manipulate that a little bit, you can just sort of work out with your own average pace. And the benefit of looking at that is that number with a walking speed will always be longer than it's going to take you.
So, yeah.
Psychologically, it's good. So that's one simple way. Most people have got that sort of built into that or on their phones already. But there are some other tools that are sort of maybe a little bit smarter. And one of them is Komoot. And this is a tool that you use online or use on your phone. And it lets you create routes. It's sort of like a fairly straightforward mapping tool where you can choose the path. And you can sync them to a lot of the latest running watches. And that will give you turn-by-turn navigation on the wrist as well. And one of the good things about Komoot as an option is that it works really well in urban spaces, but it's also a great tool if you have a route or you want to find a route that sort of takes in less well sort of cut paths in parks and remote areas. So you can, if you want to widen it out and look for to turn your commuter run into something that's a bit more enjoyable and off the beaten track, it's brilliant for that. And it'll also show you things like the terrain you're going to run over, the paths. And that will sort of help you avoid any kind of nasty main roads and stuff.
Now, is that specifically for commuting? I'm just thinking that Komoot and commute sound quite similar.
Yeah, I mean it's a strange one because actually it's really targeted more to the outdoors, the sort of going sort of trail runs and stuff. But yeah, it sounds to me like the name maybe it sort of started in an urban space and then sort of decided to go onto the trails. And then Strava Routes has just been updated. It's gone behind the premium account, so you will have to pay for it, although you can get a 6-week trial right now for free. And I thought there's some really good touches in Strava Routes. You can actually choose to maximize or minimize things like elevation.
Hmm.
So if you want your own commute not to go uphill
yeah.
or uphill, depending on, you know, on your preferences, you can do that. You could also look at the surfaces en route as you can with Komoot. But I think another sort of really good part of this is you can see heat maps that show the popular routes. So if you're feeling uncertain or you're wondering whether or not you're going to be running kind of in a lonely sort of dark street, this is a good place to see where other runners are also going around that time.
Yeah, so that's really good. That's really good, yeah.
It's a little bit of extra kind of sort of safety, I guess, there. And a lot of these can be synced with like most sort of Garmin and Polar watches now. Starting to let you load up these routes and do turn by turn on the wrist, so that also stops you having to have your phone out or necessarily listen to over the headphones if you don't have those. And then there's one nifty tool that I really like, and this is particularly at the moment it only works in London, which is a bit of a shame, but it's something called the Tenzing Clean Air Score Tracker. And we've mentioned it on this program before, but it essentially gives you an air quality score. It's powered by real-time data from King's College, and it works best with Strava. You can plan routes without having to use Strava. You can go and plot your route and see whether or not you're going to be taking a cleaner air route than otherwise. But if you pair it up with Strava, you also then, after every run, you get a little score that appears at the top of your results that tells you how clean your run was.
That's really good, isn't it? That's a really clever bit of tech, that, I think.
I mean, yeah, you want to be trying to getting over 85. That means you've got good air, which I think is, you know, if you sort of find yourself, you know, we had a podcast on this, didn't we? And we talked about it, and the difference that just running one street over from a busy road can be massive in terms of the air that you're breathing. So it's this thing is kind of quantifies that as well. It's nice to sort of see that you can move one road over and your score will change quite considerably. So it's a nice little thing.
Yeah, and they've started to add curated lists of routes too, so you can find some that are in your location that other people have run already. And again, that's a bit more about the discovery. It's about sort of transforming that from being kind of an A to B, get there as quick as you can, into something that might be a little bit more of a pleasant experience, and using the runtime for other results.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Kieran, can we talk about the backpack? Because I feel like that is the key commuting item.
The backpack, yeah, you have to have the right backpack, otherwise this is not going to be fun. it can make or break the whole experience. And I, you know, there's one thing about the backpack, like your shoes, these are this super personal thing, depending on your, you know, the build and how much you're carrying and all of those things. So it's quite hard to prescribe on the best. But I would say, you know, some tips that I've found from run commuting over the years. You've obviously got to think about capacity, think about your laptop size, and if you're going to have to lug the laptop, think about one that's going to be able to fit that. And then shoulder straps are absolutely essential, to look at those and look for something that's nice and wide, but also adjustable. So wide straps will cut less, but those adjustable straps are kind of essential for when you flex up and down. So some days you might not have as much stuff to port as other days. And if you can't tighten in the straps and loosen them when that happens, it's going to be a bad experience. Same goes for a sternum and waist strap. They're really, really what control how locked down the pack will feel when you've got it on. You know, bounce is the thing that you're trying to avoid here. I also really like this bags with like a 360 opening, and that's kind of basically a zip that will go down around kind of three of the edges, and you can sort of open them up. And that means you can get into the bottom of the bag as easily as the top.
So that's clever.
You smashed your socks or your work pass or your keys at the bottom, right?
Yeah.
And you can get those out. Waterproofing, an extra sort of attachable pouches are good too. And I think really interestingly, if you're thinking about this, look for even going into kind of ultra, multi-day ultra packs, you will probably pay a little bit more. But I swear by I had a pack that's by WAA that I used for the Marathon de Saab. And that was years and years ago, even though I talk about it a lot now. But it's lasted me. And because it's versatile, I can add bits on and take bits off as I need.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's been really useful and it's lasted. So,
yeah. I've got one of those Ultimate Direction it's officially a fast packing, one of their fast packing backpacks, but it's a similar thing, and it's a bit bigger than what you would wear if you were like running a 50 mile or even a 100 mile ultra. But you can get like, you could easily get a change of clothes and a computer in there if you wanted to. It's kind of a nice size for it.
Yeah, it's nice if they have some front pockets that are easily accessible. You can put a few essentials like a bit of money and your keys and stuff, so you're not having to scrabble around as well without investing in a belt or something. So the packs, yeah, and I it's a hard one because you need to try a few out before you find the one that will really suit. But I think it's safe to say that, you know, if you've got just a regular rucksack, it will probably give you a sort of slightly negative experience first time out. So if you're starting out first time, don't be put off by that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic, like, you whenever you see people running along and they're having to hold the the shoulder straps. You know, they sort of, they've got their hands in the lower loop of the shoulder strap to keep the bag on tight. That you shouldn't be doing that. Yeah, they're like absolutely zero arm movement because you're holding your bag because it won't do it properly. Like that's a really good, don't use that bag for running.
Yeah. You don't want to wake up, you don't want to do this a couple of times, for the first time and then 3 days in have back problems or wake up feeling stiff because you've been running differently. You know, it's, you want to do it right. And then I've got a few other sort of highlights that they're just little bits of kit that I've encountered along the way that I think will help with a few of the other problems. So wet kit, often offices don't have anywhere to dry that kit, and hanging it over the back of the chair isn't the best way to ingratiate yourself with your colleagues. So one product, it's another product I've mentioned on here before, and it's the Under Armour Breeze Tee, and it really comes into its own for this. It's just a t-shirt that dries from sweat soaked to absolutely bone dry in under 10 minutes. So if you're going both ways, you've then got a dry t-shirt for later on, which is fab. And then in the same vein, anti-stink gear. so there's a substance called Polygene, and lots of the biggest brands will have started to kind of create, to use Polygene in all their different garments. And essentially what happens is the fabric that makes up the garments has been treated with a solution it's got an active ingredient that is silver chloride. And silver chloride essentially stops the bacteria growing. And it's the bacteria that make everything smelly. So if you Polygene-infused T-shirts, socks, all of those things, it will stop them smelling as bad. It won't stop them smelling totally. There's no guarantee of that. But it will. You know, they won't sort of stink out the office quite as badly as something doesn't have it. I have tried that. I've run in socks for like 7 days. I've done a sniff test. So
yeah.
And then I think one other really useful piece of kit, which you might overlook, is a dry bag. So you can get, you know, like camping style dry bags. Because even though some of the packs will say they're waterproof, you know, with sweat and everything leaking through, and if you've got expensive laptops and stuff in there, or, you know, you're under crackers that you're going to need dry in the office, you don't want them to be wet when you get there. So get a little dry bag that has the rollover top and keep everything that you need to sealed inside. There's one that's, Osprey do a really good range, and you can probably get one for under a tenner.
Such a good investment, Kieran. Like, yeah, and then if you ever go like walking or camping, like they're just a great sort of very affordable accessory, aren't they, to have, I think.
Yeah, they're just handy to have around, aren't they? I mean, it's just a thing for all of that. And then finally, if you have to wear smarts in your office and you want to go in without kind of having creased shirts, there's something called the I Am Runbox Origami Organizer, and it essentially helps you fold up your shirts in a hard case little box that will slot into your running pack. And so you can, you know, trousers, shirts, whatever, skirts, whatever you want to fold up and keep crumple free, then that will help if you haven't got any ironing facilities, which I know a lot of us don't.
Is the box like similar size to a laptop, or how big is
it? Yeah, it's about the size of sort of a slightly bigger laptop case.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I am running. They also do a full backpack. I haven't tried it, so I didn't want to recommend it, but there's another one to look at. They do a full backpack that you can get. But I think this is a nice little versatile one that you can put in a bag of your choosing.
I guess what some people might think, Kieran, is like, that's okay if you live 5 miles from work, but I live, you know, 15 miles from work. There's no way I'm going to be running to and from. Is there anything people can do to maybe reduce some of the distance?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the sort of there's something called a sort of first and last mile journey. So it's often people might drive to the train station, jump on a train into a city, and then either commute by bus or by public transport in that city the final couple of miles. And actually, you can break those journeys up by running either side. And that's one thing. And, you know, I think something that people who are pushing run commuting would really like is to see more incentive for people to do that. So often people have committed to a season ticket. So you've paid up front, and there's less incentive if you've paid all that money to say, well, okay, today I'm going to run commute. Whereas if you incentivize it, so you were having to sort of almost more like pay as you go, if that was cost effective, it would help with you making different decisions about how many of those journeys you chose to do in different ways. And I think, you know, one thing that we've, you know, we'd really like to see, stations don't really, they're not really nice places to be, are they? So even if you arrive at a station, there's nowhere for you to, in most cases, there's not really anywhere for you to get changed. Let's say if you were going to a meeting. So there's another service actually in London called Run Friendly. And they, it's like a pay-as-you-go pass that lets you use facilities in gyms, hotels, and other places that have offered up their free sort of capacity for showers and rooms to get changed. So that's another option.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. That's really good. That I've talked with Ben about this before, and I think that he's sceptical about my idea of the running superhighway. You know, the kind of running equivalent to cycling. And I understand the scepticism, but do you think that there is a future in any way where that we have these kind of running only kind of arteries into the city? If running commuting was to really take off, or do you think that's, I think I'm in the realm of fantasy?
So from sort of say 5 miles out in that kind of distance.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think it's a really, really nice idea. I think from the people that I've spoken to around this subject, the problem is that there are easier wins to be had for the investment. In fact, when you look into this, there are not many sort of stats being gathered even around how many people might run commute or do running as active travel. So in order to create the kind of cases for things like that, for these big kind of infrastructure changes, it's very hard because no one's really assessing the need for it. Whereas for cycling and even for walking, there's more information, and so they can show and demonstrate a bit more of a demand. So I think, I mean, what we need to do, Rick, is create that demand. We need to get people doing that yeah. run, taking over the road, and then they'll build it for us.
I agree. Yeah, my skepticism comes from the premise that there isn't enough people to warrant you going along and going, I've got an idea, guys. It's a running superhighway.
Yes, I think you're currently right, but I think it's interesting, isn't it, that the people in charge look at walking. It's like, well, look, walking, that's a practical alternative, and I love walking, but it's running is so much more efficient. Like, if you actually want to get somewhere, you know, it's gonna be an hour to walk that, but actually, it's gonna take me 20 minutes to run it. Yeah, actually, think from a commuting perspective, like the efficiency of running shouldn't be underestimated. I think.
I think the other thing that we've talked about, which I think is probably a more realistic and a better thing, would be a similar sort of like scheme to the cycle scheme that companies offer. That, like, if it was just for running stuff. I mean, you can probably use your voucher if you wanted to in the sort of larger, you know, stores that sell both cycling and running gear. But if you could have the same thing where you were buying your shoes and you weren't taxed on them. And all those sorts of things, I think that would probably encourage a few more people to get into it.
Like a sort of run to work scheme, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
And there used to be this around the time, it was actually 2012, I believe. There was some the kind of run commute trains. So they would be people who would take your bags on a bike. Everyone would run your bag back at the end, and those were I don't quite know who they were funded by, but they were funded. It might have been around kind of the Olympics or lottery funding for a while, and that turned it into a sort of social run as well, which was interesting. But that when the funding ceased, that seemed to go away. But you know, that's another thing, is just about people feeling comfortable in the possibility. And if you're doing it in a group, all of a sudden you don't have to worry about the navigation, you don't have to worry about, you know, feeling alone on your own. All of those things go away, and I'd like to see sort of schemes like that get groups back together.
I think that's great, Kieran, because even if you're not, say, working out at the same office, say you were like, look, but basically within half a mile, people within half a mile of each other could run into the city together in groups of four or five or whatever. I think that would make it way more appealing, and it'd actually be very sociable as well.
And they loosely followed existing kind of train lines or tube lines as well. You kind of knew the route, and I think it might not be that you join them every week, or it happens every day, but a nice kind of weekly social run like that you could drop in and out of would be a really positive thing.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's really interesting, Kieran, talk about run commuting, and I think you're right. Hopefully, it's going to have a bit of a golden era of of run commuting and active commuting in general, I hope.
Yeah, I think we should all be running to the post office if we, you know, that's when you know it's made it, when people are dropping off parcels in the post office. But when we all, of course, go back to commuting of any type.
Yeah, exactly. But I think hopefully that'd be one of the kind of positive things that could come out of it. Like, what if cities became, if there were less cars on the road and there were more people walking, running or cycling? That'd have to be a good thing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
Kieran, thank you very much. Kieran. Much appreciated.
No, thanks for having me.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Kieran Alger, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all of your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK. Thanks for listening, and we will see you again next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.